This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning, it's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday, it's the 30th of November 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch, your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live, and we are broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio studio here in the centre of Sheffield. We're going out on FM radio and through our internet live stream. However you're listening, the show is also available as a podcast later on from the Sheffield Live website. So, talking podcasts, who was on the programme last week? Alan Holland was on the show and he was talking about his jacket, the warmest jacket in the world. Indeed, he was also talking about crowdfunding. Because if you're a regular listener, a few weeks ago, you might recall Alan coming into the show just before launching a crowdfunding campaign in support of the Nesh jackets. The target was £15,000. Well, as of last week, the campaign was only halfway through and they'd already taken over £52,000 worth of orders. So the jackets really resonated with folk, not only because they're warm, and they are warm and they're designed for people who enjoy the outdoors, but also if you buy one of their jackets, then another jacket is donated, is given to someone who is homeless or without permanent shelter. And that jacket has been designed specifically for their needs too. So it's fascinating speaking with Alan last week. If you miss the podcast of the show, then panic not, just go to the Sheffield Live website, find radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to enjoy it. That was then, though. This is now. Who is on the programme today? Well, we have two fantastic guests here in the studio with us. Nicola Middleton-Groom is here. She's the Managing Director of Wax, and we're going to hear all about Wax in just a few minutes. I'm really looking forward to this. And then later on in the show, the accountant with a heart and with a soul is back. Yes, we have found an accountant with a heart and a soul. I know that is sometimes perhaps viewed as a rare thing, but Steve Knowles of Knowles Warwick has come back into the studio and he'll be on the show later on to talk about protecting your business from potential impacts of recession and Brexit and all the negativity that we are hearing and all the worries that you may have if you're running a business or social enterprise. Steve has some advice to give you, so listen to him as well. But before we turn to our guests, what's been going on with you? What's been going on in your business or your social enterprise? Last night, it was the Sheffield Business Awards, and awards were given to businesses for a whole variety of things, from their sustainability, their corporate social responsibility, being employer of the year, and much, much, much more. If you want to see who won, check out the Sheffield Chamber tweet stream from last night, because they tweeted the winners as they were announced. And of course, they'll be up on the Sheffield Chamber website as well. Also this week, Social Enterprise UK announced the winners of the social enterprises of the year across the UK. And a wonderful range of businesses selling exciting, high quality products and services too. And they're those products and services that not only serve a customer need and do it really, really well, but also help to solve a problem in society. Check out Social Enterprise UK for details of who won their awards. So remember, you can get in touch with us. We're always interested in hearing from you. And if you want to put yourself forward to be a guest on the show, comment on what's going on in business or social enterprise or anything else, then get in touch with me. Just send an email to jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07904 272 200. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter, or you can find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well. We're always interested in hearing from you. And we're always interested in hearing from our guests. So I'm really pleased to welcome our first guest to the studio, Nicola Middleton-Groom, Managing Director, Wax. Good morning.
Morning, Jamie.
Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, Nicola, can you tell us what is Wax?
So Wax is a men's, ladies and kids underwear brand. We also do swimwear, jackets, T-shirts, hats, all different apparel.
Grand. And as MD, you run the business. Now, I have to mention right from the get-go that the business Your mother has been on the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she was one of the first ever interviewees on this program
when
we started Business Live. And I think she came on the day after an exciting event in Sheffield as well, and came into the studio.
When she won Funny Business.
That's right. Yeah. She won Funny Business and came in the very next day, which was fantastic. So the business itself and Wax is a brand that you've developed, and you mentioned men's, women's and kids' underwear.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you look at all around the website, you see a whole range of colourful, excitingly designed, entertaining and fun pieces of clothing, pieces of underwear, mm-hmm. and much, much more. So what's the history behind the brand?
The brand itself is a French brand,
yeah.
and we have the UK distribution rights. Yeah. So around 10, 11 years ago, we saw the brand a trade show in Lyon. It was actually my stepdad that saw it, and he brought a couple of the samples back and said to me, "Oh, Nick, look at this brand. It's brilliant. You'll love it." And it went from there. I was still at uni at the time, and it was just like my little project to do whilst I was at uni. Probably should have concentrated on uni a bit more, but I just loved the brand and wanted to do something with it. So yeah,
yes.
That's it. Just started from that, really.
Right, fantastic. Mm. So where were you at uni at the time?
I was in uni in Manchester,
yeah.
Doing hospitality management. So
right.
Completely opposite to selling underwear.
Yes.
But I did learn a lot of business skills at uni that I transferred over to that. So we've just built it from there.
Right. So how did you go about building it then?
So the first, my mum at the time was running a swimwear company. She was distributing swimwear,
yes.
in the UK. So it's fitted really nicely with that. The shops that we're selling to with the swimwear, we just started introducing the Wax brand to them. Mm. So we started off in the wholesale, selling to shops, mainly lingerie shops. Then we built it up to menswear and then more sort of street skate apparel kind of thing.
Yes.
And then we thought, why haven't we got our own website? We like back then, websites were built on Dreamweaver and all that.
I remember Dreamweaver. Yeah.
So it was quite the challenge, really. And when I think back to the first website, it was so basic, but it started growing slowly. And then we realised that actually the margin was in the retail, so let's start pushing the retail. We still stock all the stock, all our stockists, and we've worked with a lot of them since day one. Mm. But retail is sort of where the fun is at for me.
Yes.
Really.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Great stuff. And in terms of then building that website, mm-hmm. what's the timescale involved? And you know, I was talking with someone yesterday. The person said, yes, we see website design and website designers as like a charity. Essentially, every 2 years, you just have to allocate a whole load of cash to it.
Yeah.
because the industry moves so quickly and rebuild, and just like choosing a new charity that you want to work with.
Yeah.
Now, I know from talking with you, you've taken responsibility for building that website, mm-hmm. and developing the website. And
yeah.
it really is an impressive website, mm-hmm. not only in terms of look and design, but also in terms of functionality and speed and user experience as mm-hmm. well. So how did you go about that? Because I think it'd be great to get some advice.
So I was first thinking, right, where can we move the website onto a platform? And I wanted to move on to a platform that I knew was a growing platform. I didn't want to be stuck in it being built by someone who, it was very specific. It was built on a very specific site. So I looked at WooCommerce,
yeah.
I looked at Magento, and I looked at Shopify. And I ended up going with Shopify, looking at all the history behind it and what they've been doing and how they're just growing so rapidly. I knew that it was always going to be changing and there was always going to be new things, new exciting things. So I started researching Shopify, listening to podcasts, looking at videos, webinars, all that kind of stuff. Decided to go down the template route. So I bought a template and
yes.
then decided to then work out really how to amend my template and just teach myself how to do it, really.
Yes.
We knew how We knew how we wanted the navigation to be. We knew we wanted it to be really simple, really clean, just really, really user friendly. That was so important to me.
Yes.
Just really simple and quick, and just not making it difficult for people to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think it's kind of removing any kind of friction, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the user experience.
Yeah. Really trying to get the product to speak for itself. Really.
Yes.
Really good, clear images, and just not having things that could complicate matters.
Right, I see, yeah.
Yeah.
And was there ever a point where you had any doubts where you thought, oh, I wish I hadn't gone with Shopify, I wish I'd gone with Magento or WooCommerce or something else, or were you always pleased that you made the choice that you
made?
Yeah,
even every day there's something new that's going on. The tips that they give you, there's very specific podcasts you can... The forums are brilliant. You can ask people everything. There's groups on Facebook that you can join. There's all sorts. The support is massive.
Yes.
So you can learn as much as you want to learn.
Right.
Which was massive for me. I didn't want to get stuck, sort of it being built by, Shopify was the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Makes sense then. And in terms of the website itself, you say you bought a template, and there are lots of places where people can go to buy templates for websites. And various folk have talked about, if you are going to build a website yourself as opposed to commission a website designer to build a website, then buying a template is a much better idea than trying to use a free template.
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, I went down the free template route at first when I was sort of playing around with it, and I realised instantly there was going to be limitations.
Mm.
So I then started researching a lot of different templates. There's loads of people that you can buy it from.
Yes.
But I decided to go with a very specific Shopify reseller and make sure that they knew. I did lots of research on testimonials and looked at their support as well, because that was really important to know that if something did go wrong, what was the support lead time? And
yes.
So, yeah, I decided to go with a theme called Vantage, which was very fashion-based anyway.
Right.
So... it just meant that it was suited to my area.
Yeah, but, I see. Yeah. And what was the time scale then involved? Because there's clearly ever such a lot of research and analysis of the right tools to use.
I would say it probably took me a year in total to start doing the research. And then we sat down and I said, right, if I'm going to do this and build this, I've got to just have a month of just solidly building it and not do anything else.
Mm.
So it took me about a month to build.
Right.
And then we had about 2 weeks, 3 weeks of testing, sent it to friends and family. Can you buy off it? Any feedback?
Yep.
Sent it to current customers, like the top customers, and just said, would you mind giving us your feedback and seeing what you think?
Yes.
Mainly it was positive. A couple of people like it needs to be a bit brighter, so we made a few amendments and things like that, and then launched about this time last year, actually.
Yes, brilliant. Okay, that's great. And then any glitches once you went live, any challenges, anything that you had to sort of figure out?
The main glitches were with Shopify, the cart is very locked down, so you can't really do that much with it, which is great, and it means that it's not gonna break really. But also, you have slight limitations. So the buying was always fine, but there were certain things like techie things in the background where if someone put their email address, it wasn't linking directly to my MailChimp database, and just little things like that that I realised that I want to. I needed to work really, really smoothly. And we also have, so we have the website, but then we also have in the background running an ERP system, which basically creates all my labels for me, all my invoices. Everything is integrated. So, because we also sell on eBay and Amazon.
Yes.
So all the orders come into this ERP system and we build, everything works from there. So it means that it's really super succinct, and the time that it's saved us is just incredible.
Right, yeah, I
so
bet it is.
Especially this time of year when we're processing sort of 20, 30 orders a day.
Yes.
What would have been a whole day processing orders, because we'd have to manually type in the Royal Mail labels or DHL, it literally takes us about 2 hours.
Right.
So it's huge. And then it all integrates into our accounting system,
yes.
Xero, which then so nothing. Yeah, it's all very succinct.
So that's the Zero, a cloud-based accounting system, integrating through with your ERP system, integrating through with orders that come from the website through Shopify and from eBay and from Amazon. And as you've grown the business and you've gone live with this fantastic website around a year ago, what proportion of the orders come from the website direct? What come from eBay and what come from Amazon, roughly?
Well, it's probably around 90% come through the website.
Right.
The eBay and Amazon are sort of sitting there just to, if people Google us and they go onto Google Shopping, we're using them as... using them to pay for the being up on the Google Shopping feed, really.
Indeed.
We're very lucky in the fact that if people Google Wax or search Wax, we come up top because we've got the domain, we've got we've done all that, we've been there for years now.
Yes.
So we're very, very lucky with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So so they give another channel of discoverability then for you.
And people that are searching generally just for men's underwear or want something specific, it's a way of getting people into the brand that wouldn't normally see it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So so we've talked then a bit about the product, underwear principally, but plenty of other things too.
Yeah.
But those the underwear's the biggest seller.
Yeah, underwear's the biggest seller. And then... in summertime, the swimwear is slowly building and it's doing really well.
Right, yes. Okay, great stuff. And of the underwear, you sell kids' underwear, you sell women's underwear, you sell men's. Is the split significantly weighted in one or other direction?
We sell a lot more of the men's. I would say it's probably 70% men's, 25% women's, 5% kids. The men's is the women's is slowly growing. So I think soon it will be 50-50.
Right.
It's just getting the women into it, really. It's a lot more sport based, so a lot of people wear it for the gym and or when they're doing yoga or mountain biking, doing all sorts of things. Whereas the men tend to women buy men don't tend to buy their own underwear. Women always buy the men. Well, not always, but mostly they buy the underwear for the guys or the sons or people in the lives. So once they, what tends to happen is the women will buy one or two pairs for Christmas presents or birthdays, etc. And then the men go back onto the site and start ordering their own prints and get their favourite prints and things like that. So
that's really interesting as well in terms of who you're actually marketing to and decision makers and secondary points in the sort of customer journey as well after. Discovering it as a gift, being given it to, being given a pair of underwear, for example, and then deciding to go back. So quality and design in the underwear mean that people, once they've tried on a pair, been given a pair, bought a pair, they will come back.
Once we call them our Wax fans. Once someone wears a pair of Wax, that's it. They never, they're always. That's it. They're a Wax fan for life.
Right.
They don't want to wear anything else.
Yeah.
So it's the comfort, the fabric. It's a polyester lycra blend. So the print never fades. So they look brand new, even if you've had them for 10 years. And so they're really, really top quality.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Fantastic. Mm. That's great. And I suppose it would be really helpful for other folks in fashion and retail or in e-commerce generally. And, you know, we've had plenty of e-commerce entrepreneurs on the show. We had teapreneurs selling tea through a website and so on. And on a perhaps a bit earlier in their journey than you in terms of figuring it out, how to make it work. And they're doing really, really well. And they were selling tea not only in terms of buy some tea, different types of tea, Lapsang Souchong or whatever, but they were also selling a subscription service so that people would order and tea would come regularly every month. And quite a lot of e-commerce businesses are figuring out that subscription idea is good, whether it's razors that come regularly, whether it's chocolate or all sorts of different things, and that you know a monthly continuous payment authority, once you've got a customer who really likes you, they'll stick with it for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Is that something that?
Yeah, that's literally my 2019 plan to set up a subscription service for the underwear. Yeah. So there's that, and then also building more of a brand ambassador section to the pants, so that people can are getting it, sharing it with their friends and things like that. So 2019 subscription and build up the team Wax.
Brilliant. Exciting stuff. Mm. Well, we look forward to hearing about how that impacts and helps grow the business further. But what about you? You've talked briefly about your time at university and some of what you learned was very transferable to the business. Mm-hmm. But you've made it sound as though you got stuck in and with obviously an enormous amount of analysis and research and preparation and hard work implementing and so on. You've grown this business, you've developed this business. Absolutely fantastic. Where have you gone to for inspiration and for advice and support?
So a big inspiration and the person that I've always worked with is my mum. We've always worked together. My stepdad, he owns his own business. My dad owned his own business. He's retired now, but he owned his own business. So it's always been like a family of own your own business, really.
Yes.
Recently, I take a lot of inspiration from podcasts and listening to fellow entrepreneurs talk about how they've made it and what they've done. And working at co-working at Union Street, talking to people there.
Yes.
Going to networking events and things like that. Just take inspiration from people's stories and what they do and thinking, can I do that or can I help them? And going along that way.
Fabulous. Excellent. What sort of podcasts would you recommend?
So my favourite one is How I Built This.
Yeah.
So it's stories about how people have built their business, but it's also how they've run their lives at the same time. So I absolutely love that. It comes every Monday morning. So when I'm walking the dogs, I listen to that every single Monday morning. As soon as it pops up, I'm like, yay. It's my favourite one.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
Right. So a sterling recommendation there. That's fabulous. And I know that it's not only about wax for you. Temporary looks really, really interesting. Yeah. So I've checked out Temporary, but perhaps you can tell us what Temporary is.
Yeah. So Temporary Events is, I started that a couple of years ago with two of my friends, Emma Kirk and Emma Middleton, also my sister-in-law. And we started doing pop-up restaurants, so working with street food vendors to build. They come in, they do the food, and then we do the restaurant and turn different. We've done ones in Aberdale Picture House, CADS buildings. We've done one in old warehouses. We've done them everywhere, really. And then I started going into doing more private events. I'm not doing so much of that at the moment because my wife just had a baby. So we're just, we've got a 4-week-old at home.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So that's sort of on hold for the time being. But it's that being my experience at university, and I absolutely love working in hospitality. It was always the thing that I loved doing.
Yeah.
I think it's the meeting people and the social element of it all as well.
Yeah. But
yeah, I just love doing pop-up events, really.
And pop-up events are fantastic as well. Mm. I mean, quality of food is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious reading in a national newspaper a month or so ago. There was a well-known restaurant critique was talking about the death of big chain restaurants, or the decline in big chain restaurants, many of which have sort of had venture capitalists buy them and laden them with debt and so on. And then they've pushed out independents. Well, actually now those big chains, a lot of them are suffering.
Yeah.
And this restaurant critic said, oh, it's all the fault of millennials who just want to go to pop-ups. And it's kind of, well, think about it. Those pop-ups are serving better quality food, a better experience. Mm-hmm. And you get to taste and enjoy something brand new, fresh, exciting, and discover stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think as well in Sheffield now, with the Peddler Night Market and the Cutlery Works just opened, I love that you can go and you can just eat what you want. You can go with a group of friends and everyone can just eat what they fancy.
It's fantastic, yeah. And again, we've done the same and gone down to 92 Burton Street mm-hmm. for Peddler and enjoyed, you know, all sat together, but eating food from three or four different vendors. It's been phenomenal. It's lovely. So brilliant. That's great. So in due course then, I mean, obviously really busy time at the moment with a new baby at home. but you'll be doing more.
Yeah. We also have another website, Paw Products, which we're selling dog products on.
Right.
So that's sort of me trying to get into my own manufacturing. Another big thing that I'm doing.
Right. How's that going then?
Yeah, really good. Yeah. The growth is phenomenal this year. So, people love their animals. We've got two dogs and we'd do anything for them. We spend loads of money on them. So,
yes. Yeah. Quite. Yeah. Mm. What kind of dogs?
We've got a Cocker Spaniel. She's the crazy one. And then we've got what we call her, a funny little beagle thing. She's a beagle, but she's tiny and she doesn't look like a beagle. But yeah, she's brilliant.
Sounds great. Yeah. Wonderful. And I know, Nicola, you also do a lot of fundraising as well.
Yeah.
When you're not doing everything else. and fundraising for myeloma research. Mm-hmm. So would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
My mum was diagnosed with myeloma literally just after she'd won Funny Business.
Yes.
It was about a month afterwards. And as soon as that happens, we're like, right, we need to find a cure for this.
Yes.
So we've been working really close with Andrew Chantry and the Sheffield Hospital charities to fund to raise as much funds as we can for the myeloma research fund.
Yes.
To pay for a student to come in and just solely concentrate on finding a cure for myeloma.
Right. So
far our total is over £50,000 done in 3 years by doing charity balls, takeaway meal events, cheese and wine nights, fashion shows. We do that at Ferndale Garden Centre, who's one of my mum's friends.
Neil Grant.
Neil Grant and Helen Watson. Yeah, they're brilliant. So we do a lot of that together. So yeah, we're really pleased. Yeah, with how much we've managed to raise. So.
Brilliant. How can people support research then?
So you can donate via the Sheffield Hospital charity. If you just tell them that you want to donate specifically to the Myeloma Research Fund.
Yes.
Then they'll allocate the funds to that.
Right. So. I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, that's great. Well, the research then can have a major impact.
If people
do that.
I mean, it's probably not going to be, because of the time it takes to get things through, it's probably not going to affect my mum, but it will affect other people that get it. And myeloma is horrible. It affects your bones, and it's like my mum struggles now to do a lot of the things that she used to be able to do. And it's trying to stop that bone, the bones, they're basically just sort of collapsing on themselves.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about that and trying to make it more comfortable for people, really. Because it can really affect your spine and things like that. So
this is really impactful research and people can support it.
Mm-hmm.
How many people are affected by myeloma?
It's quite rare, actually. It's not, I'd never heard of it before my mum got it. Most people, it's sort of within the, like, it's always funded within the leukemia kind of blood cancer area. So it doesn't really affect, it tends to affect older men.
Mm.
So my mum being 50, I think she was 56 at the time, being female, it was very,
that was
very
really
rare.
Yeah.
So bad luck, but she's doing really well now. So.
Yeah.
Still in remission, so.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think we'll share some links to myeloma research and fundraising as well. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to share some links to your websites too.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
So I will tweet these links out as well. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have to be a Twitter user yourself if you're listening. You can just look up Jamie Veitch on Twitter and you'll be able to follow links. But I'm also going to give you the chance, Nicola, now to give out the WACS website address as well and any other website addresses that you want to mention.
Okay, So the Wax website is just waxunderwear.co.uk. Even if you just Google Wax, it comes up.
And that's W-A-X-X.
Yeah, W-A-X-X underwear.co.uk. The dog products are paw-products.co.uk. And then temporary is just temporaryevents.co.uk.
Wonderful. Brilliant. And you mentioned you do some co-working in Union Street, where I bumped into you. You're also on LinkedIn as well.
Yep.
So you've been really generous with your advice today for entrepreneurs listening. And this is going to be so, so helpful for anyone running e-commerce in particular. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate the time and the advice and talking with you today, Nicola.
Yeah.
It's been
fabulous. Yeah, it's been great.
You listen to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme, with me, Jamie Veitch. We've just been talking about underwear and e-commerce and much, much more. It's been absolutely fascinating with Nicola Middleton-Groom. Nicola is the Managing Director of Wax, as you've just heard. We're going to play a track of music now, which has been chosen by Nicola. And so this is Delilah. The track is Only You. Do you want to mention anything about it?
So it was going to be Paul Weller Clues, but I thought I'd surprise my wife and put this down because this was the song that we walked down the aisle. Well, I say the aisle, we got married at Ecclesall Woods, so walked into the woods too. So every time I hear it, just makes me cry. So
that's fantastic. Well, I'm going to play the track now by Delilah. And thank you so much, Nicola, for coming in today.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. That was Only You by Delilah, chosen by our last guest, our first guest today, Nicola Middleton-Groom of Wax. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed the interview with Nicola, don't panic. The podcast will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 o'clock today. Now, I'm really thrilled to welcome our next guest back to the studio. He's been here two or three times already on the programme, and he's come back again for more. It's always good to talk with you, Steve, an accountant with heart and soul, I described you as before. Steve Knowles, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. Can't complain. If to do, nobody listens.
it's great to welcome you back. Now, you have in your hand some terrifying-looking graphs with some either steep peaks or deep troughs. And I've asked you to come on the show today to talk about protecting your business from the potential impact of, say, a hard Brexit, of a recession, of economic insecurity. And it's quite timely because we've been hearing some fairly dire and woeful predictions this week from notable figures, including the governor of the Bank of England, but also including admissions from the government that a soft Brexit or the Theresa May plan will have an impact of perhaps 100 million, and a hard Brexit would have a significant impact. And you're very good on resilience. You're very good on thinking ahead. So I would like to give you the microphone to give us some advice on resilience and protecting your business.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Well, the first question is, why are we even thinking about this? Well, I think the practical reality of what we're looking forward for the future is that regardless of whether or not we have a hard or a soft Brexit, the normal economic cycle is indicating that during 2019 and into 2020, the economy would take a natural slowdown anyway. The 100 million that's been banded around, I hate round number for estimates because they're always a best guess. Even the 8% extreme that Carney was talking about in the middle of the week is an estimate. It's a best guess.
Yes.
But an 8% drop would be catastrophic from an economic point of view. And those people who sort of look at this situation and think to themselves, well, is it scaremongering? Is it real? You know, what is the potential for this? Sometimes you just have to think about things from a purely practical point of view. And if we put up customs borders on the boundaries and all the vehicles that are coming in and out of the country have to be stopped and checked, well, that is going to create delay. One of my clients has a saying, which is that he hopes for the best and plans for the worst. And if you look at some of what the big companies are doing, BMW have talked about shutting down for a month in March, April time, just to get themselves settled for Brexit, if it's a hard Brexit. And there are lots of other companies who are making significant changes to their production routines to take account of what might happen. From an economic point of view, if somebody like BMW shut the Mini factory down for a month, that has an economic impact.
Yes.
There's no question about that. And you extrapolate that across the whole country, huge impact financially.
Yes, indeed. But you mentioned something also very interesting about the natural economic cycle indicates that regardless of the potential impacts around Brexit, there would be a slowing of the economy in 2019-20. Can you just sort of explain that a little bit further about the natural economic cycle, why that would be the case and so on?
Cycles are a combination of confidence,
yes,
both consumer confidence and business confidence, and the supply of money. And the supply of money comes from the clearing banks. When you take out a loan from a clearing bank, they effectively create money. Now, if you've got either individuals or you've got businesses that are not confident about the future, then they will not borrow money to invest. That money's not created and doesn't flow through the economy. And at one level, it's as simple and as straightforward as that.
Yes.
Jamie mentioned that I have some graphs with me. One of the graphs I have is about consumer confidence.
Yes.
And consumer confidence is currently at a very high level.
Right.
But it's at a high. It's a level which traditionally peaks at this particular point, and once it peaks and people stop spending, then the economy starts to slow down.
I see.
Until people get that confidence back.
Right. Okay. So that's something that people again need to plan for and factor in. Now it's a good.
And Jamie, if I can interrupt, if you think about what's happened over the last 10 years, you know, a large proportion of the workforce have had their pay limited.
Yes.
You know, anybody who works for the public sector has had 1% pay rises for the last 8 to 9 years, and inflation has been significantly more than that.
Indeed.
You've got the people who've now moved into the gig economy, as it's called, who have, I was reading a statistic the other day, that their net pay can vary by up to £200 a month. Well, in that type of unstable income scenario, people don't have the confidence to go out and spend.
No, indeed. So what then, when it comes to planning for this, what should be people, what should folk listening, running businesses, running social enterprises, be doing right now to plan and think and protect their businesses?
Well, I've run a presentation over the years called Cash is King. Businesses don't go bust or don't fail because they start to make losses. Businesses fail at the end of the day because they run out of cash. So what you have to do is you have to plan and imagine a world where your cash flow is going to be disrupted by one reason or another, and you set in place trends and systems in order to maintain your cash flow moving forward.
Yes.
For most businesses, their biggest source of cash is their customers.
Yes.
Clearly. So the first question you have to ask yourself is, what is my credit control policy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much credit do I give my customers? Now, if you're running a cash business, i.e. it's a retail business or something like that, then it's relatively simple and straightforward. But if you're giving credit, in other words, you're making unsecured loans to your customers in the hope that they will pay you at some point in the future, you need to have a policy to make sure your credit control is robust. And regardless of the size of the customer or the importance of the customer, you need to stick to it. because it's very easy to say, well, this is my biggest customer. I need to just give them a little bit more time.
Yes, some folk listening might say, I do get what you're saying, Steve, but if I chase up rigorously my biggest customer, and if I upset and annoy them, then I'll lose them. So you're saying you absolutely need to enforce the rules and stick to them?
He who shouts loudest gets paid first. Mm. And if you ring your customers 2 or 3 days before the debt is due, and you do that on a regular routine basis, they will automatically pay you before you make that call. Mm. Because they recognise that you need to be paid and they don't want the phone call.
Mm. And, you know, you must see this as an accountant working with small businesses. Mm. You must see, when you're looking at your own clients' books, you must see that some of them are good at credit control, some of them are less so, some of them are being paid on time, some of them not, some of them aren't paying their suppliers on time. Mm. So if someone's trying to implement a credit control policy that they haven't had before, they've been perhaps lackadaisical, and they go, yes, you're absolutely right, Steve, I do need to do this, I do need to move to this. Do they do it themselves? Does someone else who is not in terms of not involved with sales or operational or delivery do it for them? What's most effective?
The most effective thing is to get yourself a credit controller who believes that money is their own money.
Yeah,
they're the Rottweilers that ultimately will get that cash in for you.
Yeah,
and if you're worried about the fact that you might upset a particular customer, then the thing to do is to widen your customer base so that you are less reliant on that individual customer. So the risk is mitigated as much as possible.
Yes, indeed. So you don't have all your eggs in one or a few baskets. Mm. So a couple of tips there on resilience. First, in terms of cash and cash flow and credit control and widening your customer base. I know you have more to say.
Oh, absolutely. Because what people do in good times is they get lazy, they get complacent. They carry stock that they don't need to carry.
Yeah,
they spend money on things they don't really need. And often one of the best things to do is just go look at all your direct debits, all the things that are going out of your account that you don't even realise are going out, and say, do I actually need that? Do I actually need to spend money on that?
Yes.
And cut back. Because if you cut back earlier, then you're more likely to survive. You know, if your car is about to hit a wall, it's the last thing you should be doing is putting the brakes on. You should have put the brakes on 200 metres before.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, so take an analytical and red pen view now to your direct debits and to what the spending is. Mm. Okay.
Well, not just direct debits, any ongoing commitments that you've got, and say, do I really need this?
So some folk listening might say, but Steve, I have to invest to grow my business. Mm-hmm. So some of these things that I'm spending money on are helping me to grow my business. So I'm guessing that your advice is not cut everything without thinking about it, but simply to really think about.
Do you really need it? And one of the things that people do is they cut back on two things. The first two things to be cut back on are training and marketing.
Right.
Which in recessionary times are exactly the things you should be investing into. Because if everybody else is cutting back on their marketing and you continue with your marketing, then you're the only people that are going to get seen.
Yes.
So any business that's there, you will get.
So you're not saying cut back on marketing, and you're not saying cut back on training. By continuing to invest in those, you'll actually be more visible if all your competitors cut back on them, and you'll continue to have skilled, talented
people. That's right. And if those people are more efficient and more effective, the business will survive.
Yes.
More easily.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's, again, I think that's a really good point of clarity and a really good piece of advice for folk listening. There are more worrying graphs in your hand here as well.
There's quite a few things going on at the moment in the economy. I mean, the price of oil is something that people sort of get worried about or get upset about because of the price at the pumps. And, of course, very, very recently, the price has come down. But we have had oil prices double in recent times, and with one exception, which revolved around the Iran-Iraq war, every time oil prices have doubled, recession has followed.
Right, OK.
Every time. So,
it's a bit of a red flag.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Indeed.
The other thing that's, that has happened is that since the referendum, economic growth in the UK has gone down below what we consider normal levels.
Right.
The Bank of England and the government run on 2 to 2.5%. We haven't been anywhere near that since the referendum.
No.
excuse me.
So the assumptions about growth haven't been anywhere near correct.
That's right.
And so what about if folk are listening and saying, oh, but what about this unexpected nest egg that the Chancellor discovered and referred to in the autumn statement, and that performance being better than expected, and suddenly having all this money? Is that smoke and mirrors then?
It's a reaction to the political opposition to what's considered austerity.
Right.
Austerity is an unfortunate word to have used in the past, because at the end of the day, what have we been talking about? We've been talking about the country living within its means. And even today, we are still spending £80-90 billion a year more than we're raising in taxes and revenue as a country. Our debt is still going up year on year. And this extra money isn't actually extra money. It's just that the level of borrowing or the increase in the level of borrowing isn't quite as bad as it was expected to be. In my mind, that is not extra money.
So saying something isn't as bad as it was expected to be, using that.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, if you in your own lives, you know, if you, what's the old saying, if you earn a pound and you spend a pound and a penny, that's problems.
Yeah.
Earn a pound and spend 99 pence, that's happiness.
Yes, indeed.
It still works on a government basis. It's still the same issue.
Well, that comes from literature as well, of course,
right.
Doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. I can't remember the exact quote, but it's of that nature.
Yeah. Yes. Results happiness.
Yes.
And yeah, indeed. So, Steve, you work with hundreds of businesses. Mm. You've worked with hundreds of businesses. And Knowles Warwick has a popular blog and an email list with plenty of free advice. And I wonder if we've only got a couple of minutes left of the show, but I wonder if I can sort of close. I'll give you a chance in a moment to give out the website address, but I wonder if I can close by saying, is there anything else that small business owners, social entrepreneurs should think about now to prepare themselves and hopefully make their business more resilient, whatever may happen next year? And anything else that you can encapsulate in only a couple of minutes, I'm afraid.
Well, it is all focusing on cash and how your cash flows run. So if you've got long-term arrangements or long-term agreements in place, make sure that the things that they're funding are also long-term assets or long-term benefits to the business. If you've got any bank borrowing of any description, try and start to build a relationship with the lender, the people that represent the bank or the other lenders that you've got. So if you've run on hard times, then you've already built the relationship.
Yes.
And if you do run on hard times, it's a very simple thing. Be honest with your lender, but deliver them both the problem and the solution at the same time.
Right. Yeah. So come up with a plan. Mm. Tell them, be honest and open, but come up with a plan.
That's right.
Okay, that's great. Well, Steve, thank you very much for that. Now, where can people find out more about you?
Well, our website is knowleswarwick.com. There's mountains of information on there that you can get. And you can also give me a call. The numbers are on the site.
Yeah, great stuff. So knowleswarwick.com. I will tweet the link to that as well, of course, so folk can find it. Steve, thank you so much for coming in today, as ever. Pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Guest today, Steve Knowles, has been in the studio talking about business resilience. Thank you very much indeed, Steve. Also earlier on the show, Nicola Middleton-Groom talking about wax and wax underwear. Thank you, Nicola. Thank you for listening. Thanks also Sangeeta in the studio as our sound engineer. We will be back on air next Friday. We have some fabulous guests lined up for next Friday. Claire Dove and Chloe Watmore are on the programme next Friday. So tune in then, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk from 10 all the way through to midday. So enjoy that. And we shall play out with a little bit of music. We're going to have some London Grammar. This is Wasting My Young Years.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business life.